I'd like to call to order the February 24th, 2021 Palm Beach County Transportation Disadvantaged Local Coordinating Board quarterly meeting. Pursuant to the TPA Emergency Order 2021-01, the Palm Beach TPA is conducting this meeting virtually using the Zoom webinar platform. The TPA selected this platform because it does not require the public to purchase or download any additional software or equipment to attend this meeting. Aside from the Zoom webinar platform that the participants will use to attend remotely, the public will have no discernible difference in their ability to watch the meeting from that of someone physically attending the meeting. Introduction to join the virtual meeting as well as contact information for assistance are provided in the published meeting agenda. Please note that although some members of the LCB are attending the meeting in person, board members will be appearing at today's meeting remotely either via webcam or telephone. Additionally, scheduled presenters and the LCB liaison will also be appearing via webcam or telephone. Now, everyone, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. May I have a roll call, please?
Sorry, I had to make sure my microphone was on. So before I call the roll, I want to remind members present in person to unmute your microphones.
Zoom webinar. Pushing
the button on the base prior to stating your name, and then those attending virtually, please unmute your microphones. And alternates, please let me know if you are present on behalf of one of the representatives. Mayor Stephen Grant.
Present.
Angela Choice.
Present.
Jeannie Christman.
Present.
Elisa Kramer is excused. Wen Deng.
Here.
Elsa DeGoy is excused. Marie Dorsman.
Here.
Robert Goodman.
Here.
Maria Hernandez. Maria Hernandez. I do see that she's present, Mr. Chair, but I'm not getting her audio. And I do see her virtually, so I will mark her as present. Okay. She may just be need to connect something. Robin Manuel.
I'm here.
Angela Morlock. Vanessa Palomino.
Here.
David Rafaitis.
Present.
Merlene Ramnon.
Present.
Takesha Saffold.
Present.
Laura Schultz.
Here.
Millery Sanat. We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Margie. And now, are there any modifications to the agenda?
No, Mr. Chair.
If there are no modifications.
Motion to approve.
Thank you. May I have a second?
I'll second.
Second.
All right, and Margie, do you need them to state their name?
No, Mr. Chair. So we did change our, I should have noted that, I'm sorry. I forget how less often this board meets. So we did change it from doing a motion to adopt the agenda to just having modifications to the agenda. That way, if something needs to change, you can just make the motion at that time and you don't have to adopt the agenda formally. You can still carry on with the meeting in the order that we provided it, but you're able to change it as you go with a motion and a second.
Okay.
So I did note it for my notes if I do need to add it later, but we're good to keep moving forward.
All right. So just for a little bit of clarification under Robert's Rules of Procedures, we are going through the agenda as stated and that there is no need to amend. However, if anybody would like to change something on the agenda or put something on, then we would need a motion to amend.
Correct.
So, however, we do have a motion and a second for the agenda.
Yes.
And under Robert's Rules of Procedures, we need to go through with that unless someone wants to withdraw their motion. I think it would be easier just to move forward.
Yes. And I would ask that would be a verbal vote versus me doing a roll call vote just in the sake of time.
Yes. So all those in favor of the motion as stated, please state so by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, state so by saying nay. Hearing none, the agenda is approved unanimously. Motion to approve the minutes. Are there any changes to the minutes? And this is a question to the board. If not, can I have a motion to approve the minutes as presented?
I'll move to approve.
So I had Robert Goodman followed by Jeannie Crispin. So if there's no objection, I can do a motion by Robert and a second by Jeannie.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor state so by saying aye.
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 Any opposed state so by saying nay. Hearing none, motion to approve the minutes is passed unanimously. Moving forward to general public comments. As a reminder, there are three ways to provide public comments for this meeting. Written comments may be submitted online at the website provided in the agenda. Verbal comments may be made by virtual attendees using the raise hand feature in the Zoom platform. And if anyone is on their phone, they would hit *9.
*9, yes.
And verbal and written comments may be provided by an in-person attendee submitting a comment card available at the welcome table. Have we received any general comments?
No, Mr. Chair.
Does anyone have their hand raised?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right. We will now close general public comments and we'll go to comments from the chair and member comments. As for now, I look forward to thanking everyone who participated in our workshop today, and we look forward to getting a little bit more information regarding the eligibility requirements and how does one become eligible, the process, I think. You know, who do they call, what website do they go to, and where do they need to send the documents? And before we open it up to the floor, I'd like to welcome Ms. Yuen Dang as our representative for the citizen advocate vacancy, and Ms. Vanessa Palomino, a representative for the Area Agency on Aging. And I'd like to request that you introduce yourself and provide a brief summary of your credentials and what would you like to do here with your position on the LCB.
Okay, I'll start first. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Wen Dang. I am a transportation engineer. I've been serving in this area. I've been serving in this area for 10 years. I have extensive experience in transportation planning, engineering, construction. Ultimately, my participation here is I want to, be of value in providing my expertise in the way that, one, we do routing, I understand transit planning, and then ultimately be a better serve in this area for the community.
Thank you, Ms. Dang.
My name is Vanessa Palomino.
Vanessa, make sure you speak into the microphone.
My name is Vanessa Palomino. I've been with the Area Agency on Aging for 1 year. I don't have any experience with transportation, but because we work with the elderly, I do want to help them as much as I can.
All right, thank you so much. And now, if there's any virtual participants from the board that would like to make comments, please raise your hand and Angie will let me know to give you the floor.
Margie, you said Angie.
I'm sorry.
That's all good. And then Mayor, previously for this board, you did have me do a roll call to make it easier for the members. Would you prefer that I do that? Or do you want to go with the raised hand option?
Well, let me ask you this. How many people have their raised hands raised right now?
Zero.
Okay. So if someone would like to have a comment, please raise your hand. I know. Or.
Otherwise, I do have it noted for you that at the end, we can also take member comments as well.
Okay. And so if no one has a comment now, we'll most likely do the roll call at the end of the meeting to discuss anything that we like to make a comment on at this meeting. So we'll move forward and go to our LCB liaison report. So I invite Ms. Kelly Peterson to review the LCB liaison's report.
Zoom webinar.
Thank you, Mayor Grant. As Mayor Grant mentioned, my name is Kelsey Peterson. And for those of you who perhaps weren't at the last meeting, I am the new LCB liaison. So to start off, the Florida Commission for Transportation Disadvantaged will hold a public workshop on Thursday, February 25th from 2 to 4:30 p.m. The workshop will focus on the use of the TD Trust Fund dollars in relation to individuals with disabilities who are eligible for American with Disabilities Act complementary paratransit services. And for more information, you can visit ctd.fdot.gov. Next, March is Florida Bicycle Month. So the TPA encourages local governments and partner agencies to host events to promote bicycling and bicycle safety. And for more information on that and to view a calendar of events, you can visit walkbikepalmbeach.org. There is an upcoming webinar called The Inclusive Design of Autonomous Vehicles, a public dialogue webinar. And this webinar will discuss accessibilities for passengers with mobility disabilities, specifically methods and technologies for entering and exiting autonomous vehicles. The webinar will take place on March 10th from 2 to 3:30 p.m. For more information and to register, you can visit accessboard.gov/AV. There will also be a CTD Innovation and Service Development Grant webinar coming up, and that will be hosted by the CTD and the University of South Florida Center for Urban Transportation Research. They are hosting a training webinar for eligible grant applicants on Thursday, March 11th from 2 to 4:30 p.m. So please save the date because there will be more information coming soon. There we go. So the 2021 Virtual Legislative Day is coming up on March 29th. That's hosted by the Florida Public Transportation Association and the CTD. And that'll be again on March 29th from 1:30 to 3 p.m. For more information and to register, you can visit floridatransit.org/legislativeawarenessday. There is a 2021 American Association for Retired People Community Challenge Grant that has applications open now. This grant provides small grants to fund quick action projects that can help communities become more livable for people of all ages. The applications are due by April 14th, and for more information, you can visit aarp.org/communitychallenge. And then last, LCB members are encouraged to provide a 10-minute presentation on how their agency and everyday work relates to the transportation disadvantaged. So if you're interested in presenting at a future LCB meeting, please contact me at kpeterson@palmbeachtpa.org. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelsey. And if you want to have a 5-minute presentation, I think we'd be okay with that too. But yeah. So I'll invite our newest members to encourage them to speak with Kelsey about what we've done in the past so that we can learn a little bit more about your agency and how it's more of just an information sharing of what you do so that we have a better understanding from all the different agencies that are on this board. Now we're on to action items. Motion to appoint a representative to the South Florida Regional Transportation Authority Americans with Disability Act Advisory Committee. The SFRTA ADA Advisory Committee is an advisory committee to the governing board that addresses disability issues in the Tri-County area as it relates to Tri-Rail. Is requesting the Palm Beach County LCB to designate a representative and alternate to serve on this committee. Kelsey, you have a presentation?
I do, yes. I think staff is pulling that up momentarily.
1.2.25. Zoom webinar.
Okay. So this presentation is on the South Florida Regional Transportation Authority Americans with Disabilities Act Advisory Committee. And we discussed this item at our October meeting, but deferred it so that members who were interested in being nominated could be present. And since it's been a few months, I have just a few slides to give a brief refresher before we get into the nominations. There we go. So the SFRTA ADA Advisory Committee is an advisory committee to the SFRTA Governing Board, which operates TriRail, and it addresses ADA issues in the Tri-County area relating to TriRail. So each of the three counties served by TriRail, Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade, has an ADA coordinator, an LCB member, an LCB liaison, and a local transportation representative on the advisory committee. But currently there's a vacancy for an LCB member from Palm Beach County. So we are looking for a representative and potentially an alternate to serve on the ADA advisory committee as the LCB representative for Palm Beach County. And prior to last meeting, I believe that Angie Murlock and Takesha Saffold had both expressed interest, so we wanted to give them a chance to speak about their interests. And that is all I have for my presentation. Thank you.
All right. And so now I'll call the board to see anyone who would like to express interest on this board meeting. And when does this board meet?
So I'll let Lou take that one as the chair.
It doesn't meet often. We met yesterday, but it's every maybe 3 months or two months.
It depends. On a quarterly basis or on an as-needed basis.
During COVID, it's been a little messed up. Normally, it's by every other month.
Okay, so six times a year.
Yeah, about that, in case anything comes up. We also usually do a Tri-Rail station assessment, too. We go to one of the stations, and we're there with an ADA expert that they hire, and we go through the whole station, which is actually kind of a cool thing. But yeah, it's kind of neat.
That is interesting.
So we can maybe do Boynton Beach. And
I look forward to getting those results, yes. So now I'll ask if there is anyone to unmute their microphone and state your name and stating you would like to be on this board, and after we hear from all the nominations, we'll vote for the person and then an alternate.
Mayor Grant, I just want to note for the record that I did not receive any public comments on this item.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And so I'll ask Ms. Saffold or Ms. Marlock if they'd like to continue their interest to please state so.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Takesha Saffold, and I definitely have an interest in serving on that committee. I am a Tri-Rail rider, which I have been for years. Paratransit, fixed route, I pretty much use all means of transportation, not just through in Palm Beach County, but in Fort Lauderdale and Miami. I have used the Tri-Rail to go back and forth from the airport and also to use other paratransit systems as far as linking. I feel that I would be great for this committee, and that I am ADA certified. So some of the things that I should be out on the lookout for is some of the things that I feel that I am certified or have some expertise, knowledge in, and also having a rapport with many others in this county who use the Tri-Rail station that may have various questions or concerns I've been able to answer and to assist with. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Seffel.
And Mayor Grant, I wanted to double check before I noted it for the record. I don't have that Ms. Morlock joined the meeting. Okay. It would only be Ms. Saffel that provides a background.
Okay. Was Ms. Morlock at our October meeting?
No, and we had deferred this item to allow her and Ms. Saffel to provide a background of their credentials so that the board could make a determination on who to appoint.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Jeannie, and I can't find my hand to raise. I don't know where it went.
We hear you fine. So if you'd like to make a comment, we...
Yeah, I would. Takesha Saffold does ADA training for all of my safety meetings for my drivers. So if she needs a nomination from another board member, I would like to nominate Takesha. I think she'd be a good candidate for this. And if Angie doesn't want to do the alternate, I'd be okay doing the alternate.
All right. Thank you so much. And I did see
This is Lugan. I was going to say that there is a designee and an alternate, so they could both possibly participate.
Okay. So with Ms. Morlock not attending, if there is a second for Jeannie to be the alternate, we could move forward.
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Deng. And so now I'll ask for a final time. Is there anyone that would like to be the representative or the alternate? If not, voting will close. And Ms. Saffold and I think Ms. Chrisman will be the alternate. Not hearing any further nominations or interest. The nominations are now closed, and congratulations to Ms. Saffold as our representative to the SFRTA ADA Advisory Board and Ms. Chrisman as the alternate.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I greatly appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Thank you. Moving on to our second action item. The Palm Beach TPA is a designated official planning agency must annually review the AOR, annual operating report, and forward comments to the Commission for Transportation Disadvantage, CTD. Palm Tran Connection staff will present the attached annual operating report. I invite Jeremy Baker, Palm Tran Director of Administrative Services, to present this item.
Zoom webinar.
So Jeremy and I are both going to do it together, so I'll kick it off. Thank you. So Lou Ferry, Palm Tran, and Jeremy Baker from Palm Tran. So understanding the AOR, the Annual Operating Report, or AOR, provides a financial... The Annual Operating Report provides a financial and operational overview of the TD program. The AOR is a requirement of the Community Transportation Coordinator, or CTC, pursuant to Chapter 427 of the Florida Statutes, and is due by September 15th each year. Information reported is collected and compiled from each county based on the state fiscal year of July through June. Information is collected to generate a statewide operation profile of the Florida Coordinated Transportation System, evaluate certain performance aspects individually and as a whole, and create a summary of performance trends statewide. The state AOR is completed by the Commission of the Transportation Disadvantage, or CTD, on January 1st each year and delivered to the governor, legislature, and commission to the substantiate the need for additional funds. So they take the AOR from each CTC, and then they compile that into one state AOR, which is then used to, and they present it to the legislature, and they use that to determine what's going on in the state as far as coordinated transportation. So we, in your packets, you received the actual AOR. So, right, Kelsey, they had the snapshots from the actual AOR that was presented this year. Excuse me. We also compiled something to show you the last 3 years. Jeremy will take that.
So being the financial person, I get all the number issues all the time. So looking through this, instead of trying to go through the item that's attached as a backup, I believe Kelsey put this together to try to summarize the salient points of the presentation. But one of the things that stands out when you look at this is there seems to be a dip in 19 for our fixed route trips and then a huge spike in FY20. This comes into one of the nuances of this program because there are two separate parts to the TD program. There's the paratransit trips that we operate and the TD bus pass program. The things that we report on this reflect the reimbursement that we've received from the commission. So in 18 and 19, we are able to recover all of our grant funds solely through our paratransit trips. What happened in FY20 with COVID impacting us for 4 out of the 12-month period is that we sought reimbursement for our bus pass programs. So because of that, it increased our number of fixed route trips significantly. We'll also see this continue on in FY21, but then barring any other changes to the program in FY22, it'll probably go back to normal where the fixed route trips are lower. And then that has a direct impact on the total number of trips. And do you have a point?
So tomorrow's meeting is actually going to be discussing some of this on how they determine especially the use.
They're going to try and determine the use of the bus passes. The interesting part of this part is if we give somebody a bus pass, it's not considered, a 31-day bus pass is not even considered 31 trips, which is ridiculous. It actually considered 12?
It is 12 trips. And the assumption, and I have no idea how they got to that assumption. The alternative is if you can prove to them that the person took more trips, then they will accept that data. However, with our current fare system, we're not able to track easily the number of trips taken by each passenger. So that is another opportunity where our new fare collection system that we're working on implementing, that was funded in great part by the TPA. So we have to make sure that we make that clear each time we say it. But when that new fare collection system, we should be able to better identify the total number of trips on the fixed route system being taken by those passengers.
And just real quick, so 31-day bus pass, you have to think that you're going one way and coming back. So maybe at least 31 or at least 60 trips. Well, one of the biggest reasons why they changed it was the smaller counties fought and said that there's too many trips being generated by the larger counties with fixed route buses. So we showed so the TD Commission is constantly, I'm sorry to go off, but I think this is important to talk about. So the TD Commission, remember, it's funded by the trust fund, TD Trust Fund, which really comes from our registration, $1.50 from our registration for motorcycles, boats, and our automobiles. It's shared throughout the whole state. So Palm Beach County, Broward County, Orange County, Hillsborough, Miami-Dade, we get the vast majority of the amount of money. Now, of course, we have more population and we have more trips. Well, the smaller counties have always fought to say there's an urban versus rural problem within in Florida. Now, we have transportation with our fixed route buses. We have our own transportation money that we put in as well. So here in Palm Beach County, we have a lot of options. If you're in some Sumner County way up there, they don't even have fixed route. They don't have much. So they might have to still go to dialysis to another county. And that TD is what really pays for and was created for those that are transportation disadvantaged. They don't have any other option. So it's a constant fight between urbans and rural. So because we were generating so many trips, because we're counting our 31-day bus pass as more than 12 trips, so to speak, it caused the formula to have more money go towards those big urbans. So tomorrow is going to be a pivotal thought process as well to see how we can really capture that. And again, with our new fare system, we'll be able to show, look, we could pull these numbers and show that there's more than 12 trips, which will actually draw more money down to our county.
Okay. And I have a question. Is it done equitably in the sense is that it's not by the county vehicles or boats registered? It's everybody, you know, state of Florida only has one pot and then it's distributed 67 ways, not each county getting 1/67th.
Right. Right. So they have a formula and it's all, it's about the amount of miles that you take, the amount of trips, the population, all these different things in this one formula, try and figure out how they break up it's about $67 million, I think it is. Maybe Sean knows, but I think it's right now the trust fund is around that amount.
Okay.
And it's broken up really where a lot of the larger urban counties are getting the money. Smaller counties don't get as much.
Right. You know, there's some counties that have less than a 50,000 person population.
Exactly.
But, you know, they're the, you know, 100 square miles or more. So it makes it that much more difficult.
So moving beyond our trips by service onto the next slide, which is our passenger trips by purpose. This one is somewhat difficult because we rely on the people we're transporting to self-report where they're going and what they're going for. If they choose not to answer that question, everything kind of rolls down into the life-sustaining other category. But these are the major categories that the TD has established. And this really just comes out of our internal reporting system where people book their trips and they say this is the reason for going to it. Our next slide is our passenger trips by revenue source. What's interesting with this is there's not a lot of revenue sources that we get to subsidize these trips. Realistically, the county is paying the vast majority of these costs through various means. We are appreciative of the money from the Commission for Transportation Disadvantaged. In the past, there were some other funds that we were eligible for, but we no longer are. So it really is between the Commission for Transportation Disadvantaged and the county picking up the remaining of the expenses. At this time, there's no indication that that's going to change, that the county will change their intent to continue funding this program. So then when we go to our trips by provider type, that is our next slide. This really just breaks down into the CTC, which is the trips that we provide ourselves. Those are our fixed route trips. And the transportation operator is those provided on our paratransit service. Again, this is reflective of the first slide where you saw a big swing in the number of bus pass riders, and that's why the trips moved as much as they did. But you can see also the large dip in the transportation operator trips from 19 to 20, caused mostly by the COVID issues that we have. The next slide is just some information on our vehicle data. It goes into the formula. There's nothing earth-shattering here, but you know, if there is something that you'd like more information about, we can go deeper into detail about it. But this is just our how many miles we travel, the types of accidents, the number of vehicles that we're operating in service, and the number of drivers. And these drivers are reflective of our paratransit operators, not our paratransit and all of our fixed route operators. The next slide is always my favorite, being the financial slide. You can see that our expenses continue to grow year after year. Our revenues are keeping up, but that's again only because the county continues to fund whatever shortfall there is with regards to the program. And then our next slide is our performance measures. Again, there's nothing dramatic here. Part of the rise for the accidents per 100,000 miles is the decreased number of miles that we were traveling in FY20. Again, going back to the impacts of COVID, we did have lower miles between road calls. Again, we were operating an older fleet, which we are turning over at this point. And then our cost per trip, it seems to go down in this, but again, it's because of the formula with the increased number of fixed route trips that causes our average cost per trip to go down instead of going up. But our cost per paratransit trip, as you can see, continues to increase. And then our summary slide just talks about the number of trips, how they've moved, how our miles have moved, our revenues and expenses. It's, as the title indicates, it's just a summary of the other slides. We are open to answer any questions if there are any. If not, we hope that you approve of the annual operating report so that we can submit it to the Commission for Transportation Disadvantaged.
Mayor, I have a question.
Yes, thank you.
For Jeremy, I'm looking at your cost per paratransit trip that has increased over the past 3 years. Can you tell me what's the average trip distance for?
I will defer that question to Mr. Ferry.
Okay. The average trip length is usually right around 10 miles. I have it for January. The average trip length for January was 9.32 miles.
And then, when did you have another question?
I do. I'm looking at the paratransit trip, and I'm trying to compare it to the trip purpose, just trying to understand, because the increase is significant. You're talking about more than 25%. See if we can get more ridership, then we can get that number down to help with ultimately your numbers, right? So I'm trying to figure out where can we do better.
Each day, we continue to try to answer that same question. Currently, some of our greater challenges are on the paratransit side because of social distancing requirements. We're having a much lower passenger per hour efficiency rate than we have in the past. It is difficult not being able to multi-load multiple parties onto a single vehicle. And that drives it down. The same on our fixed route side. We've got capacity limitations on our buses, which isn't necessarily going to show up in this group of data, but a lot of our costs are staying flat or doing normal increases, but our ridership is significantly lower. So it causes all of our ratios to skyrocket, which in our next presentation we're about to do for our transportation disadvantage rate model, it'll become very clear the impacts on that.
And if I may, Mayor, real Grant. Quick, Mayor,
yes, Lou.
You got to remember with TD too. So transportation disadvantage program is throughout the county, which means there's a lot of really, really long trips. That 9.9 miles per trip is low compared to the TD trips, because the transportation disadvantage trips, mostly they originate outside of the core area of the ADA. So they're the Loxahatchee to Boca's, the Pahokee to Boca, the, you know, Jupiter to Boca, that maybe out west that they don't have service, or, you know, they're longer trips. The TD trips tend to be the longer trips. The ADA trips are tend to be closer because they're within that core area or 3/4 mile of the bus route.
And I just want to know, Robert, I do see that your hand is raised, but I was giving Ms. Dang an opportunity to ask her questions.
I'm done.
Okay. So I do have Robert with his hand raised, Mr. Chair.
Yes. I'd like to give the floor to Mr. Goodman.
Lou, what kind of accidents are those, and were there any injuries to passengers or drivers?
We have some major accidents, but not many throughout the year. Most of them accidents. And Jeannie could talk about this, Jeannie Christman, if she wants to hop in, but most of them are drivers hitting fixed objects. Huh. So they're backing into poles, they're backing into to mailboxes, maybe within their own parking lot hitting things. As far as major accidents, we might have one every couple months, but the amount of miles that we're doing, we're close to 1 million miles a month. So it's actually amazing to me how we're not in more accidents, but.
An accident like the one I was involved in last year, what's the process for reviewing the driver and reviewing what happened to that in that accident?
So normally when there's an accident, pretty much of any source, we have the providers actually have a video system, and then we have our own video system with our cameras. So we'll review the cameras and we'll determine what happened, whether it be we got hit by because someone ran a red light, or if the driver fell asleep, things like that. So we review everything and write a very comprehensive review of it. We actually have to send any major accidents to FDOT, Florida Department of Transportation. We have to send them to the TD Commission. So there's an extensive look into what happened.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Goodman. Do we have anyone else with their hand raised?
No, Mr. Chair. And for the record, I do not see anybody. I'm sorry. I don't see any members of the public with their hands raised.
All right. Thank you. And so if there is no further comments from the board or from the public, I'll ask for a motion to accept the AOR.
Motion to accept.
I'll move to accept.
And do we have a second?
Second.
I'll second.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, in case those virtual didn't hear, I had a motion by Jeannie and a second by Wen.
All right. And now that we have a motion and second, and there's no further discussions, Margie, would you please make a roll call?
Yes, and just for clarification for everybody, the motion on the floor is to adopt the fiscal year 20 annual operating report as presented. Before I call the roll, virtual members, please unmute your microphones. In-person members, please remember to turn on your microphone. Please respond by saying either yes or no when I call your name. Mayor Grant?
Yes.
Angela Choice?
Yes.
Jeannie Crispin?
Yes.
Elisa Kramer is absent. Wen Deng?
Yes.
Elsa DeGoy is absent. Marie Dorsman?
Yes.
Robert Goodman?
Yes.
Maria Hernandez?
Yes.
Robin Manuel?
Yes.
Angela Morlock? And I'm still showing her as absent. Vanessa Palomino?
Yes.
David Rafaitis?
Yes.
Marlene Ramnon?
Yes.
Takesha Saffold?
Yes.
Laura Schultz?
Yes.
Mallory Sinnott?
Yes.
It passes unanimously, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Our next item is information items.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. There is, we do have another action item.
I was looking at. So now we are moving to approve the fiscal year 21 transportation disadvantage trip rates. Palmtran Connection staff will present the attached proposed
webinar
TD trip rates for fiscal year 21 and provide an explanation of how the rates are established and why they have changed. I invite Lou and Jeremy to present this item.
Thank you, Mayor Grant. It's a little odd because I had some wonderful notes written on this and they've been discussed several times through the other presentations. So please indulge me so that I don't go too far off. But a brief description on the, we move on to our next slide. There we go. The TD program was established by the Florida Commission for Transportation Disadvantage to provide opportunities for transportation disadvantaged citizens to obtain access to transportation for their daily living needs when they're not sponsored by other organizations for those needs, those sources being federal, state, or local funding sources. Some examples of other funding sources might be Medicaid or the Department of Senior Services. We establish these rates on an annual basis as a requirement from the Commission for Transportation Disadvantage so that we can be reimbursed for these trips under the TD grant program. This rate has to be approved by you, the local coordinating board. These reimbursement rates that we use for the TD grant program are established based on budgeted expenses less revenues divided by the number of projected trips and according to the direction that is provided by the Commission for Transportation Disadvantage. So they set the way that we have to do it and we just really put in our numbers and whatever it comes out and that is our rate. In the past, we have provided trips far in excess of the number necessary to fully recover the grant dollars that are allocated to us. This past year, though, was the first year that due to the decrease in ridership, we were not able to fully recover the grant funds. And that was taking into account a change that the Transportation Disadvantage made mid-year where they provided emergency relief funds to try to supplement the amounts because they saw statewide, basically the trips kind of fell off of the cliff for everyone and it has a negative impact across the board. So our rates are going to swing quite widely when we move to our next slide. And we see what our proposed rates are for FY21. So in FY20, our proposed rate for an ambulatory trip was $33.11. Our proposed rate for FY21 goes up to $65.74. That's an increase of $32.63, almost 100% increase. The same can be said for our non-ambulatory trips, which go from $56 and change per trip to almost $113 per trip. Again, that same almost 100% increase. As we've discussed, the reason for this is that our expenses have remained the same. The way that we operate our program, our vendors are paid per revenue hour. So whenever they're out running a vehicle around, or even if it's stationary waiting for trips, we're paying them for that time. So it's incumbent on us to try to get as many passengers on that vehicle and move them through as quick as possible to get the efficiency up. Because of the decreased ridership, those expenses have stayed the same, but just mathematically, our denominator has changed and we don't have as many trips. That is what the large increase is attributable to. We do have in your packet, you have the full worksheet that's required by the CTD on how this is all calculated. I'll go into whatever other questions you may have. I believe Lou has a point that he'd like to make before we move on.
Right. So just back to what I was saying about how the TD program breaks out. So this TD rate model was created almost as a response to the rural saying how, you know, we're not getting enough money, everything like that. So the urban said, well, let's figure out how much we actually spend on transportation. So as you can see, it's a lot of money we're spending. They still give us the $4 million grant that they give us, or 3 point something, whatever they give us. Ever. Let's say $4 million they give us for a grant. This just means we're going to be billing them at a higher rate, not buying as much trips from them. However, they cap it out at whatever $4 million divided by 12 months. That's how much they're going to give us no matter what. And we overmatch the program with ad valorem taxes, with the county money, by so much that it really doesn't matter. So this actually shows, and it's a trend that's around most of these urbans, that these prices have gone through the roof since COVID. The actual cost of what it costs to do business here. That was a thought process to actually show what's happening in each county.
Is that the end of the presentation?
This one was short.
All right, thank you. And so I'll ask anyone from the public who has any comments in regards to the price increase. Margie, do you see anyone with their hand raised?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right. And now I'd like to ask the board if they have any comments in regards to the new price increases. And so this is not saying that we're getting more money. This is just saying this is what our new costs are because of social distancing. Even though gas was much lower last year than it has been, I remember, you know, April, it was under $2 a gallon. But because of the inability to put more people on a paratransit vehicle, we are severely hindered by the increase in costs because we still need to give them rides, except now we need more vehicles, more drivers, and everything else that goes involved, and more gas.
And not to put too fine of a point on that, but this does not increase the amount that we get from the state, because that's done through a separate formula, which I believe that's the workshop that they're having this week, is to discuss if they're making modifications to that formula, which has to go to the legislature for changes. It doesn't change the trips that we're providing to anyone. So we will not be decreasing or denying trips because of this. This is just merely a matter of the billing rate that we're charging to this grant. We will continue to provide trips at the current level as needed until we receive some type of direction from the Board of County Commissioners.
Okay. And I'll ask the board if they have any questions. So please raise your hand. And if you're in attendance, please let me know.
So yeah. I don't see any hands raised at this time.
Thank you. You know, it's not necessarily a question for PalmTran, but this is more of a question to the board with your select agencies. You know, part of the traveling disadvantage is the income requirement. And we have been shown a spotlight on the digital divide that I'm sure is pretty apparent, with most of the people who are writing only have a phone and not necessarily signing up online. In my city, I'm trying to work with nonprofits so that we are able to get refurbished or used electronics and teach the disadvantaged how to use that, because, like you saw with some of the needs, is, necessarily life-sustaining activities, which includes going to the grocery store. There are certain programs available now that, can provide people food as if they have access to letting the people know through the internet that they need food. In addition, there's the telemedicine that is becoming a huge service. And so people who have Medicaid or Medicare now being able to use telemedicine can go see a doctor without requiring PalmTran connection to take them. This is not the work of this board to solve that issue. It is the work of more or less the individual members of the board to work together to solve this issue, because we are making sure that everyone has access to transportation. However, that would go outside of our scope to determine electronic internet and electronics. So this is something that if you'd like to discuss with me outside of the board meeting, I'm happy to discuss, because knowing that there are other solutions, it's point, but we have, in the history of the internet, we're going on almost 30 years that I'm aware of, we really haven't reached out to the disadvantaged communities to get them involved, and now's the time. So I'd like to thank PalmTran for showing the actual costs of what it takes for this system, for this service that we provide in Palm Beach County. I'd like to thank the Board of County Commissioners for funding it as much as they do. But to think that the county is going to be able to find more money each year, including any sort of social distancing, or what we don't necessarily know what the future is going to hold. So I'd like to thank you for hearing me speak about this issue. And if there are no further comments, I'll have a motion to approve the current price trip rates.
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
All right. And seeing no further discussion, may I have a roll call, please?
Yes. So the motion on the floor is to approve the fiscal year 21 TD trip rates as presented. I had a motion by Wen and a second by David. Before I call the roll, again, virtual attendees, please unmute on your end, and in person, please turn the microphones on with the base button. Mayor Grant?
Yes.
Angela Choice?
Yes.
Jeannie Crispin?
Yes.
Elisa Kramer is absent. Wen Deng?
Yes.
Elsa DeGoy is absent. Marie Dorsman?
Yes.
Robert Goodman?
Yes.
Maria Hernandez?
Yes.
Angie, I'm sorry. Robin Manuel?
Yes.
Angie Morlock is absent. Vanessa Palomino?
Yes.
David Rafaitis?
Yes.
Merlene Ramnon?
Yes.
Takesha Saffold?
Yes.
Laura Schultz?
Yes.
Mallory Sinnott?
Yes.
It passes unanimously, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Now we are moving on to informational items.
2.5.
For fiscal year 21, the Community Transportation Coordinator evaluation will occur March to April 2021. Findings and recommendations will be presented at the May 26, 2021 LCB meeting. LCB members are requested to participate in the CTC evaluation process. There is no backup for this item. However, I believe we do have a presentation.
Yes, thank you. So as Mayor Grant mentioned, again, my name is Kelsey Peterson. I'll be discussing the CTC evaluation for fiscal year 21. I'm going to give a brief overview of what the CTC evaluation is and then go over some important dates and action items for this board. All right. So every year, the LCB reviews the CTC in order to evaluate the operations and performance. And this process is guided by the CTC evaluation workbook provided by the commission. And in addition to reviewing and analyzing data on operations and performance, a main component of the evaluation is surveying the riders and beneficiaries, and when relevant, purchases of services and contractors. This process kicks off now, actually, with this meeting, and it will go through April, and then I will present findings and recommendations at our next meeting on May 26th. So what does this all mean for the board? At the end of this presentation, I will be asking for volunteers to help make at least 20 survey calls to riders, as well as to complete a rider evaluation, which would involve actually taking a ride on PalmTran Connection and evaluating the service. And you can volunteer for one or both of these activities. In addition to being one of the main duties of the LCB, this is a really exciting opportunity to connect with the community and to hear directly from people who are using PalmTran Connection. And then to not just listen, but to also be able to take those stories that they share with us and to use them to learn and to improve the service. So I hope that for those of you who are able to volunteer, that you will take advantage of this opportunity. Similar to last year, we will have an online and a phone version of the survey. So for those who aren't able to volunteer for those activities, I'll be asking you all to share the online survey link with your networks to try and reach more riders. Then at the May meeting, the LCB will review the workbook for any errors and provide general feedback before it's finalized. So in terms of next steps, I will be sending out a follow-up email about the CTC evaluation, which will include information about volunteering as well as the SurveyMonkey link for you all to share. I'll also reach out directly to anyone today who offers to volunteer and provide specific guidance on the survey and rider evaluation process. And then those surveys and evaluations will be due back to me by April 30th. That way I have time to compile and analyze everything. And based off that survey information and the workbook process, I'll present the findings and recommendations to you all at the May 26th meeting for your review and approval. And so that will conclude my presentation. I'll now take any questions and open up the floor for anybody who wants to volunteer. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelsey. I'll be volunteering and look forward to having the opportunity to do this. I know I didn't do it last year, but I'm excited to do it this year. And I encourage all of our members, especially our newest ones, to really get a better understanding of what PalmTran is by taking them up on their offer to have a paratransit trip, plus calling a couple of the riders to see how the CTC coordinator is doing.
This is Pretty Ramnam. I'm sorry. I would like to volunteer as well. I know I did try to do it last year, but that was just when the pandemic came in, so I didn't get to have the experience. However, I'd love to do it for this year. Thank you.
Mayor Grant, I do want to note for the record, there are no public comments, and I do have Takesha, Angela, and Robert with their hands raised.
All right. Takesha, if you'd like to begin.
Yes, I just want to mention that I would like to volunteer for the evaluations I've done in the past, and I really enjoy the evaluations of the drivers and asking the specific questions. So I certainly don't mind doing it again.
Thank you. And Mr. Goodman.
I also want to volunteer. I did it 2 years ago, and I found it so interesting and informative. So I'd like to do it again also. I'd do both again.
All right. And Margie, we have one more hand raised.
Yes, Angela Choice.
Yes, I would like to volunteer for the rider. I volunteered last year, but due to COVID, the trip got canceled.
All right. So thank you for all those people that have volunteered on the meeting. For those that did not, do not worry. Kelsey will send you an email. And if you find time in your schedule to do this, we thank you in advance. Our next item is the CTC update. Palm Trans staff will provide an update, and the presentation is attached.
All right, so I guess that's for me. This is
the webinar
for Palm Trans. So first slide, if you want to move to that one, is the Palm Trans service update. We went through a lot of these already, but I'll just go through it quickly. If you have any questions, just let me know. So as it is right now, fixed route continues on an enhanced Saturday schedule. With regular boarding and alighting practices. The number of people on board fixed route continues to be limited to no more than 20 passengers. All fixed route buses, as I said before, have been equipped with operator safety doors and the Quantum Securement system for wheelchairs. The GoGlade service continues to operate as a dial-a-ride system. It used to be a flex service. Now it's a dial-a-ride service in which the rider can call and directly get the trip to their destination. That's actually the only mode on our service right now, the GoGlades, which is out west, that's actually seen an increase in ridership. Next slide, please. Palm Trans Connection continues to provide regular service. Our OTP has averaged over 95%. Passengers per hour is a little over one per trip. So at this time, I looked at some data. At this time last year, it was about 1.6. So you can see the difference between the not as much multi-loading. The average weekday ridership is over 2,177 passengers per weekday. We were at 3,700 last year. Just to compare that to our neighbor south, Broward is actually at half the amount that they did last year. So they're at about 1,500, 14 to 1,500. So we're doing actually more passengers than them as well. And Miami-Dade's around 3,000 when they're usually at like 8,000. The amount of routes on the road are about at 75% the regular daily total to achieve that social distancing and keep the drivers working. Now, again, we're not doing one trip per passenger anymore. We do have sometimes we have to multi-load just because we're having more trips. So if people are going in the right direction, same direction, we are multi-loading at this time. Next slide, please. So other activity buses are thoroughly cleaned each night and periodically throughout the day at predetermined locations by an outside vendor. Masks, gloves, hand sanitizers, wipes, and additional PPE have been distributed to frontline workers and continuously is given to them. Daily temperature checks and when possible, employees are working remotely if they can. Connection efficiency projects. So this is the eligibility phone interviews that started pretty much last week. I'm gonna go off on a little tangent here because you had asked about the eligibility process. So if I could take an opportunity to explain it a little bit more. Okay. So the eligibility process before this was a registration process. So we would have an application, the applicant would fill it out. There'd be questions about, can you use the fixed route? If the fixed route had service around you, could you use it? And then there was a medical form where they'd sign off on the medical form. This is mostly for ADA, for the Americans with Disability Act, which is the reason why someone would become eligible for the Americans with Disability Act is they have a disability that prevents them from using the fixed route bus, okay? So all of our buses are ADA accessible, all the fixed route buses. They have, the buses have ramps, the buses actually kneel. So anybody that has a disability theoretically could ride the fixed route bus. However, if you have a disability above and beyond that, you can access it, whether it be a mental disorder or you know, maybe there's not an accessible bus stop in your area and for many, many reasons. But the registration process was pretty much if the medical verification was signed off on, we stamped it as a yes. Well, that's not really efficient. That's a registration process. So what it is now and what is changed to become is more of an assessment for your need. What is your need? So you're not automatically, just because someone's visually impaired doesn't mean they're automatically a Palm Trans Connection rider. We can ask them, you know, do you live near a bus route? Where do you usually go? Well, I really only go to Publix and the library. Well, you know, the Publix and the library are along the same route right in front of your house. So, you know, We're going to do an initial assessment where we ask them questions to see if we even need to send them an application. Okay, so we're not sending everybody an application now. And then from there, we'll ask more questions about what their needs are. Because maybe they can ride the fixed route. or maybe they only need to ride Palmtran Connection, which is the door-to-door transportation, at night because they could see during the day. So we're not trying to deny transportation to people, but we're really trying to figure out what their need is. And we found that those that actually need it are going to get it, okay? But those that are just signing up just to get a little card so that they can ride the bus for free, they're not going to be able to do that anymore. We have in our old process, we would process over 400 applications a month. About half of them never rode on Palmtran Connection. All they did was get a card, which enabled them to ride the fixed route for free. So it doesn't really make any sense. So we have a program where you have to have a disability that prevents you from using the fixed route bus to become Palmtran Connection eligible. And then if you want to ride the fixed route bus, we'll give you an ID to ride the fixed route bus. But the thought process there is if someone's riding Palmtran Connection and you go to Walmart and you can take the fixed route bus to Walmart, but take Connection on the way home, you just saw how much it costs for us, so that we just saved, you know, $40, so to speak. So if someone is using Palmtran Connection and can use the fixed route bus, that works for us. Someone that has never touched Palmtran Connection obviously does not have a disability that prevents them from using fixed route bus. So this new process is for new applicants only. It doesn't affect anyone that is actually on the Palmtran Connection system right now. And right now we're slowly moving into it. This process, it's going to be a little bit longer. We're going to have more interactions with the riders and the potential riders, which is actually a good thing. It could be that, did you know that, you know, Mae Volland is down south? Maybe you can use Mae Volland. Maybe you can use a different means of transportation. It doesn't always have to fall on Palmtran Connection. So it's more of that education. We also hired a new outreach representative, which is Nicole Fincher-Sheehan, who's in the audience right now. She's going to help with travel training. So we are going to allow people that can ride the fixed route, we're going to help them learn how to use the fixed route. She's going to be out there letting our citizens know when it's safe to go out there. But right now she's doing a lot by the phone and all that. So if I may, does anybody have any questions about that eligibility process right now?
I'm good.
No, anybody does. Thank you. If not, also, Marge, can you pull that one thing up for me? So as we were talking today, I did have one of the agents send me the breakdown for our RTD eligibility requirements, and there it is. So I'll let Jeremy discuss it because he's a member guy. But as you can see, to become eligible, you're one actually that first line as a family size of one. If you make $9,570, you can qualify for our TD program. And for the bus pass, it's $15 for that bus pass. Then for the $20 bus pass, it's anywhere between 75.1% to 150%, and the federal poverty guideline at 100% on the end. So it just kind of shows the breakdown of what we do here. So to become TD eligible for Palmtran Connection, it's actually all the way at the 100%. For the annual income for 150% is where you get that bus pass for $20, $15 for the 75%. So what we did is we saw that to get, for someone that has an income that low, at 75%, we figured that $70 bus pass is only costing them $15 for 31 days. So we thought that was a pretty good deal for them. So it's heavily subsidized, but we know that their income level is so low. Now, the biggest thing with the TD program that's kind of crazy is that if anyone betters their situation, for lack of a better term, falls out of this category, every year we recertify them. Unfortunately, they get a job, they no longer qualify. So you have to then take into account how they would get to where they need to go.
So there is a kind of a cliff, so to speak. And is there something that the county could decide, hey, if you're making 150 to 250, it's $40.
We haven't had that problem. We haven't had anyone advocate for that. But I mean, we can look at
I think that's something that I spoke with Clinton in regards to the reduced rate bus fare pass. And, you know, this is, you know, right now the $20 for the full year, $15 for the full year. Is that correct?
It's for a bus pass for a month, monthly bus pass.
So, okay. So currently what is the monthly bus pass going to cost?
$70.
And so
if you make between $0 and 75% of the poverty level, you pay the $15. Then if as Lou said, if it's between that, if you make 1% more, 1/10 of a percent, yeah, 1/100 of a percent more than the 75, then it goes up to the $20
versus the $70.
Versus, yes. So, but still, even at that, you're still getting a $70 monthly pass for $20. And to answer your question directly, if the Board of County Commissioners chose to do that and offer a different pass, I believe that is within their purview, but we would have to go back and verify that it doesn't violate any of the FTA regulations about our passes. And I do want to clarify that even beyond the TD program, there are a number of other ways that riders can get free and reduced fare passes at this point. We do have a number of like half rate fares for seniors. I believe Medicare, Medicaid, or Medicaid, always get the two of them.
Veterans.
Veterans, yeah. They can ride for free.
Students.
Students have are also free.
Half fare.
Half price. So there's a number of other things outside of the TD program where we already have that. But it might be a good side conversation to come back to you and just show out all of those different fare opportunities.
And I believe the county is going to be discussing that next month.
Yes, we do have an agenda item that we are taking to them. And I don't think it's necessarily discussing all of that, but it's for them to approve us to offer a 3-day and a 7-day pass.
Correct.
Which we've not done in the past.
And then the discussion might go further for a future day. All right, thank you.
Mayor, right, I'm sorry, Lou. I do have that Takesha has her hand raised. I'm not sure if it's regarding this specifically, Lou. That's why I wanted to mention it.
All right, Ms. Saffold.
Yes, I do like the new eligibility criteria, and I do agree with training people to use all means of transportation. The fixed route, I'm someone who uses the fixed route one way and then may get picked up by paratransit or vice versa, or, you know, any way to expedite my trips and to also save money. So I think that doing that is a great idea. Now, I know that this new eligibility criteria is for new applicants, but for those who are currently using the paratransit, well, I wouldn't say using it, but they're eligible to use it, but they're not using it. Is that something that we go through the current individuals who are using the paratransit system and just to make sure that they are still using it and not just being someone who's in the system? I do know some individuals, they have the service, but because they either have family members or friends who take them places, they're not utilizing the system. So they're just a person. Do we go over the applicants and just to see if they're still eligible versus, you know, just the new applicant eligibility process?
Okay, thank you, Takesha. So the ADA eligibility actually lasts for 3 years. Okay, so that ADA eligibility, for those that use the system like yourself, if your eligibility comes up for a renewal, we're most likely just going to give you a phone call and update whatever your situation is. Maybe your emergency contact has changed. Maybe you changed your address. Maybe you needed something like that. So someone that uses the system will get a phone call for to update their ADA eligibility. For those that have not used it, they will have to go through the whole assessment again. Because just as I just described, if you have not used the Palm Tran Connection service for 3 years, then we're going to have to do an assessment again to find out why or if your needs have changed.
Okay. Thank you.
You got it. All right. I'll continue on with the presentation. One of the big things that we did in the next slide, please. We do have a policy that following the CDC guidelines, PalmTran will not transport persons who are COVID-19 positive on its fixed route, connection, and GoGlade services. The reason why I want to say that is just what we deal with on a daily basis is kind of crazy. About 2 weeks ago, we found out that there were two dialysis centers. There's about 30 so dialysis centers within Palm Beach County, but there were two dialysis centers that created a, I'm going to call it a secret triage, to provide service for those that are COVID positive, except they didn't tell us. So not, we didn't know, but we were transporting people that were COVID, knowingly COVID positive and not letting us know. So that was, we squashed that pretty quickly to say that we can't transport, that we don't have special vehicles to ensure that. Now, I just said before, we handle everyone as they are COVID, like they are COVID positive, meaning we're taking the precautions and being careful, but to then know and transport someone that is, we stop that pretty quickly. So we do not, but the problem is they have to self-disclose this. We can't ask, because on the fixed route side, everyone that boards the fixed route bus, we do not ask, are you COVID positive? We don't do a screening that they do when you go to the doctors or wherever else you go in the quick screening. You know, I get a screening every day I go to work and they give me a screening. So because we don't do that on the fixed route bus, we can't do it on the paratransit bus because we have to be comparable to the fixed route bus. So it's a pretty important policy that we have, but it's also difficult if people don't self-disclose. The other big thing that happened in the last couple of weeks is the federal law that requires wearing a mask while on the transportation vehicles. Also within intermodal, in transportation areas, they have to comply with this. And if not, it may result in denial of the boarding or removal. Also, refusing to wear a mask is a violation of the federal law now, and passengers may be subject to penalties under the federal law. So that was actually signed by President Biden, and we have to put new stickers on and do all kind of stuff for our buses to make sure everybody knows that. The next slide, please. So this is just a graph showing the passengers transported by month and just showing in April of 2020, we were down to 27,000 and change as far as how many passengers were transported that month. Up in June to 44,954. We went in October was 51,299. And in January, we were at 48,676. Normally, we're around 80,000 a month. So it just shows kind of the trend of our transport. And it has been going up lately, especially weekly. The next slide, please. Our on-time performance, as you can see, it was very high in April and May and June because there wasn't as many riders, but we're still at 95%. So our standard or our industry standard is actually around that 92% line. So we're doing very well with that. And we also have far more service than we probably should have on the road because of the social distancing and all that, which enables our drivers to be on time more often. Next slide, please. This is something that we've presented to you guys. So the TD ridership and the complaint report. So for the month of October, we had 6,707 TD riders with 5 complaints and 2 were valid. In November, we had 5,425 riders, 6 complaints and 4 were valid. In December, we had 5,582 TD riders on PalmTran Connection with 1 complaint and 0 being valid. And in January, we had 5,676 PalmTran Connection TD riders and 5 complaints with 5 valid. The valid complaints were 4 being discourteous driver, 2 cell phone usage, 2 reckless driving, which could be speeding, 1 late pickup, 1 they did not assist, and 1 other complaint. So does anyone have any questions with that part? If not, I'll move on.
I have Robert Goodman with his hand raised.
Sure.
Yeah, I have a question from earlier. On the social distancing, I'm fine. I've been on both the fixed route and the PalmTran Connection, and there have been people sitting right behind me. The drivers are not enforcing social distancing at all. I don't know if they're afraid to ask, you know, someone to move or what it is. And the other day I was on a bus and there was a person on the bus who had their mask below their nose. And I said, you need to put your mask above your nose. And the guy yelled at me, you're going to die anyway. Nice people. And also the drivers are not giving their names at all. I know they're supposed to. But you know, how do we enforce social distancing on buses?
Okay. So I'll just respond to that. Thank you, Mr. Goodman. We cannot force it. We can only encourage it. And the reason, again, is because we don't force people to sit in a certain spot on the fixed route bus. So we cannot force people to sit places on the PalmTran Connection bus. We can only encourage it. We'll do a better job, again, getting that out. I'm sure Jeannie's on right now. She'll let them know of encouraging the social distancing. We do have seats that are kind of blocked out. We've ordered seat covers to say this seat is not available and things like that. Also, we are going to order, or in the midst of ordering, sneeze covers, which means that they're going to be plastic in between the seats behind you and in front of you, so that it gives a little bit better social distancing as well.
That sounds horrible.
I know, that's what they call it, sneeze guards.
No, the idea of having a plastic in front of me, I don't know. The other thing is also that, what was I going to say? I'll come back to it. I don't remember. Sorry.
Okay. Well, you could always call me whenever you want.
I know. Thanks.
I also have Takesha with her hand raised.
Yes, Ms. Saffold.
Yes. My question is, I know that there are some riders who are medically excused. They have a medical clearance to not have a mask on for whatever reason. Are those individuals being transported by themselves, or is it still a shared ride with an individual who has a medical clearance to not wear a mask?
So yes, there is a mandate, or according to that mandate, there can be someone that not wearing a mask because they cannot wear a mask. We do not put them on their own vehicles, no. So just for full disclosure here, again, this is public transportation. All right, there's an inherent risk that everyone takes for taking public transportation. We're doing the best we can to encourage the social distancing, making sure people wear their masks. But we cannot mandate or segregate people that are not wearing a mask and put them on their own vehicles just because of the sheer amount of trips that we're doing, people we're transporting, and the costs associated with it, as you just saw today. So there could possibly be someone you're sharing a vehicle with that, because of that medical clearance, is not wearing a mask.
I remember my other question. On those new vans that you bought that I told you I complained about because people can't step into it, how many of those vans are there?
There's only 40 right now. They're minivans and they're higher steps.
So yeah.
We're not ordering them again.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I do have Merlene Ramnon with her hand raised.
Yes, I just wanted to commend Lou for, treating everybody as infectious, because that's standard precaution. I also want to make a comment regarding those persons who may have respiratory illnesses or cardiovascular illnesses, and they're not able to wear a mask. Maybe a suggestion would be for them to have a towel or a rag, something small that they can actually cover over their nose and their mouth, just in case they have to cough or sneeze or what have you. But some of those may need to be put in place so they're not constantly having, the mask on and, creating, whatever distress they're having. But maybe telling them to take a cloth, a small rag or towel, whatever it is. But those should be some other measures that probably should be placing somewhere inside the vehicle or on the outside so they're aware as well.
Thank you. We actually allow face shields. Mm-hmm. Remember, we also transport kids that have autism, mm-hmm. that are mentally disabled, that cannot wear things on their face, restrictive right. like that. So we allow any means with that facial covering. We try right. to work with everyone we can to try and transport them. Remember, these are mm-hmm. not only do the actual riders need to go wherever they need to go, but some of the parents need that respite, and some people that are caregivers for the Alzheimer's, they need that respite too, and they need to go to those centers. So we try and work with everyone, and we're trying to keep everyone as safe as possible, but this is an unprecedented world that we live in right now, so we're trying to do the best we can, and we appreciate it. Thank you for the comment.
Okay, no worries. Thank you. That's very good. We have difficulty too with healthcare workers wearing the face shield, because the face shield, if you know what the face shield, what it doesn't protect you, pretty much, because it's open, it's left open underneath. Now they're making some different types where you have the goggles and you can extend it a little bit more below your chin, but it still does not protect you like how the mask would.
But, you know, we do the best we can, but we have to continue to educate, you know, even our own healthcare workers, you know. So if we're educating them, can you imagine what we have to do with the public?
Need our handkerchiefs.
We're doing the best we can. We all are. So thank you very much. We'll try and get through this quickly because I know we have something else going on too. So this is the next slide is for the 2020 CTC evaluation, just trying to close out responses to that. For this general question, the first, this finding was the complaint process. We have, you know, just like the slide previous, we've given you that those complaints for the TD. Next slide, please. So the next finding was coordinating PalmTrans fixed route and tri-rail transfers and everything. As I alluded to before, we actually have an outreach coordinator and we also have a mobility coordinator on the fixed route side. They've begun to prepare the trainings and workshops for customers to transition from paratransit services to fixed route. So now we actually have two actual hires that are going to help with this. Before we did not. So in addition, there is a PT stat team dedicated to promote ridership on fixed route. So they also would like to get as many people on fixed route as possible. One quick tangent on that is our fixed route ridership is really it's in dire straits right now. You know, those people that have not taken trips on our fixed route, we don't know if they'll ever come back. They might have found a different way to go. So we need to get a little creative on how we're going to deal with the fixed route. And again, we're only allowing 20 people on each trip there. So we're denying some trips, passing up people. We're actually, PalmTrans Connection is strategically placed throughout the connection, throughout the county. And we're picking up some of those pass ups. So if someone's passed up, we'll take a connection vehicle and we'll help them go on their way. But going forward, it's really going to be tough for our fixed route. And this is industry wide, not only here at PalmTrans, but we need to get our riders back as well, because some of them have found other ways to get transported. The next one, please. The answer to this one is that 5310. Hopefully Marie will talk a little bit about that later on in her presentation, but it's not something that we actually do as a CTC. Next one, please. School buses. Again, school buses just cannot be used in the system that we have with our average trip length of almost 10 miles. And the way that we have our county set up, school buses just can't be used within our system. We've tried that. I've been here almost 19 years. We still haven't figured out a way to do it, but we do work with the school system with bus passes for the fixed route. Next one, please. So this one, actually PassWeb is available 24/7 for trip inquiries. The IVR information is taken directly from the client file and the rider's eligibility file. So during those interactions you have in the next month with some of our riders, if they don't know about our PassWeb, if they haven't used our IVR, whatever information is in their client file is what we're pulling from. So if they didn't let us know that they now use a wheelchair, and then every time we show up for their trip, we don't have a wheelchair on there, it's because they didn't let us know. So they also have to let us know what's going on as well. So we continuously verify that by going through our CERT program. Next one, please. This is a great one. There's holiday service, so that means PalmTrans Connection and PalmTrans. And Go Glades service every day of the year. We had 7 major holidays where we didn't have service. Now we do. So that's wonderful. Next one, please. The career source, I know Elsa's not on right now. We try and work as much as we can to try and help them out. We don't have a specific agreement for career source, but we try and help people get to their employment all the time. So I think we work well together. I know back in the day, we had something where we had an interlocal agreement. And we tried to give them bus passes and it really didn't work out as well as we thought. So we're always looking for innovative things for the career source. Next one, please. Same thing here. We're constantly monitoring all aspects of the transportation we provide. We have the Connections Efficiency Project, like we said, we talked about. We're currently in the process of the first phase, which is the eligibility phone interviews. And we already moved from the 7-day out to 3 days out in November. And we've already seen a decrease in no-shows and cancels because of that. We are constantly looking at our performance. We are performance driven here at PalmTrans. I can share with you our monthly operating reports if anybody ever wants. If you want more statistics, we try and we look at all aspects of what we do for PalmTrans. Next one, please. Passenger surveys. Key findings here, our response is the IVR system has a real-time feature. So actually when the vehicle arrives, the driver presses arrives and it automatically sends a phone call to that person saying that they arrived. Okay. Drivers are not permitted to call the client, but as I said, they have that button do an automated call, but also with the Pass Web, they can actually see their ETA and see where the bus is located within 15 minutes before their window starts. And as far as the fare payment, customers can purchase tickets to ride. We are working on a cashless fare system, which hopefully will be available by the end of this year. And that's very exciting for us. So that would be a cashless fare system where someone could take a credit card, put $30, $50 in their account, something like that. And as they use the system, it would be deducted. So we're very excited about that. It's just a, it's a huge procurement. And then, and it's a huge, we have to upgrade our trapeze scheduling software. So I think from that, I think I'm finished. So if anyone has any questions, I'm here for it.
All right. Thank you, Lou. And so do we have any public comments regarding this?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right. And do we have actually any partner agency updates?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we do. If you're right. Moving to the next item.
So what I'll ask the board, is it okay if we move forward with the partner agency updates and then we'll go through a roll call with any questions that we have for PalmTran before we end this meeting?
Mayor Grant, I have to go to another class. So I hope I'm going to get off now.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So we'll move forward with the partner agency update.
End meeting or leave meeting.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, my name is Marie Dorisman. I am a transit coordinator with the Florida Department of Transportation. And today I'm gonna give you a brief overview of one of the programs that we manage in District 4 and how it is related to the TD program. Next slide. I'm part of the Office of Model Development in District 4, and we have Birgit Okush, which is our District Model Development Administrator, and Larry Merritt as the passenger operations for the district. Like I said, my name is Marie Deussman. I'm a transit coordinator for the district. Next slide, please.
Marie, I'm sorry to interrupt. I think you should actually have control of the presentation.
Okay, let's see.
There you go.
Okay. Oops. Not really. I don't.
No.
Okay.
No, I don't.
There's the difference.
Go back, please.
Okay.
We will
go
have,
back, please.
Maria, we'll have staff.
Back, please.
EPA staff control the screen because there seems to be a delay.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Today I'm going to be talking about. Can you go back, please? Today I'm going to be talking about the Section 5310 grant. The purpose of the Section 5310 grant program is to improve mobility for seniors and people with disability by removing barriers to transportation services and expanding transportation mobility options. The program was established in 1975 as a discretionary capital assistance program in county where public transit was unavailable, insufficient, or inappropriate. Next slide, please. It is a federal grant designed to improve transportation for seniors and people with disability. It is a formula grant based on target population. FDOT received the grant directly from the federal transportation agencies. So FDOT is the direct recipient of the grant. we allocate the grants to the agencies, human services agencies. Therefore, those agencies are the subrecipient. Next slide, please. FDOT works directly with the FTA, and we coordinate with the CTC to reallocate the grant to community transportation coordinators, public transportation agency under contract with the CTCs, private nonprofit organization under contract with the CTC, public agencies under contract with the CTC, and private taxi companies that provide share ride services. Next slide, please. As the recipient and subrecipient, each one of us has our responsibilities and role. For FDOT, as a direct recipient of the grant, we announce the grant, we review and evaluate the applications, we reward the Section 5310 funding, we provide technical assistance to the agencies, we ensure that all agencies comply with state and federal regulation. As the subrecipient applying for the grant, they work with collaboration with their respective CTCs. They coordinate transportation services as directed in their application. They maintain the Section 5310 vehicles provided in their maintenance plan. They comply with all safety and drug regulation. They comply with all state and federal laws. Next slide, please. Eligible project, next slide, please. Eligible project consists of public transportation project that exceed the requirement of ADA, for example, expansion of paratransit services beyond the quarter miles requirement, expansion of current hours of operation for ADA paratransit, incremental costs of providing door-to-door services, acquisition of vehicle and equipment designed to accommodate mobility and that exceed the ADA requirements. Next slide, please. Other eligible projects consist of public transportation projects that improve access to fixed road services and decrease reliance on complementary paratransit. For example, feeder services, building an accessibility path to the bus stop, including curb cut, sidewalks, accessibility pedestrian signal, and other accessibility features. Improving signals, implementation of other technology, improvement of enhanced accessibility included ITS. Next slide, please. We also allow alternative to public transportation project to assist seniors and individuals with disability. For example, the volunteer drivers program, purchase of vehicle to support new accessibility taxi ride, shared and carpool. We support administrative expenses related to new voucher program and transportation services offered by human services providers. Next slide, please. The program funding, we actually fund two types, capital expenses and operating expenses. For capital expenses, FDOT will allow 80% of the grant to be FTA, 10% will be FDOT, which is the state participation, and 10% must be a local funding. For operating expenses, FTA will allocate 50% of the grant, and local participation will be 50%. Next slide, please. The program timeline is as follows. Late summer, like on July or August, FDOT begins to prepare the requirement documents. Early winter, the agency, we actually hold an annual workshop, and the agency are required to attend that workshop. Late winter, the agency will complete the application and submit the application to FDOT. On October and November, we notify the agency of their reward and the funds became available. Service area, we covered Broward County, Palm Beach, Martin, St. Lucie, and Indian River County. Next slide, please. Last year, we were able to allocate $4 million on the four UZAs. Miami UZA received 3.3. Martin County received 100,000. St. Lucie received a total of $525,000, and Indian River, $232,000. Our focus is to improve mobility, increase access, expand capability, and support the CTC and the transit agencies in their missions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions?
And so I'm going to ask Margie, is there another partner agency update?
No, Mr. Chair.
So we'll have the board do a roll call. And if there's any questions for PalmTran, our CTC coordinator, or Ms. Dorsman with FDOT, and if there are none, we'll end the meeting. Lou?
I just want to say thank you to Marie. She's done a great job with this, and Marie's predecessors before that really didn't work with the counties as well to try and actually get us the money to procure vehicles or do something for us. It was mostly for the nonprofits, and I want to thank Marie for all her hard work, and we really appreciate it, especially Jeremy and the money. We really appreciate what you've done for us as the counties to try and for these replacement vehicles that she's actually given us the funding for. So thank you, Marie. You've done a great job. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lou.
So Mayor Grant, I can do a roll call. I did want to note for administrative item 4A1, the correspondence letter, there is no presentation from staff, and I did not receive any public comments on that one.
All right. So
I can
I'd like to do the roll call, and then I'll go through the administrative.
Okay. Angela Choice?
Yes.
Do you have any comments?
Oh, no comments.
Okay. Jeannie Christman?
My only comment is to also thank Marie, since my drivers and I are having some of those vehicles, and they really appreciate it, as do our passengers, I'm sure. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Okay, Wen Dang?
Hi, I actually have a question. Something that Jeremy said piqued my interest earlier, I know, about the cashless fare program. With it being an opportunity for a subscription-based user where they draw down funding ultimately as they're using it. Is there any consideration, for example, a fare reduction during peak hour, traditional peak hour, morning and afternoon peak hour, just so we can reduce the amount of capacity in VMT on the actual roadway itself?
We have not started to consider that at this time. We're focused on getting the system rolled out. I'm sure that as we do, we're going to find that there's a lot of opportunities for us to make modifications to the service. But any change like that, I do believe we'd have to go back to our Board of County Commissioners to get them to approve that. But it is something that we can look into in the future.
Yeah, I think it's a growing demand, especially in Palm Beach area, as we're getting more dense and more populated, that there should be some kind of incentive program to encourage people to be using transit, especially during traditional peak hour. One, you know, it'll provide additional capacity on our streets so that cities can do innovative projects for example, lane eliminations on some of these really dangerous routes that we have along US ones. With incentive programs like that, where you incentivize by providing a lower cost to essentially ride transit during those critical hours, could really help with the capacity and the growing demand on the existing roadway network.
And I'm sure Lou will attack me for this afterwards when we get back to the office. But there's a little bit of a difference in what we need to do, because on the fixed route side, that's maybe a very valid way to incentivize people to take the fixed route buses. However, on the paratransit side, where we'd also have to do similar situations with the fares, I believe those are some of our most critical times where we're at almost like a crush load on the paratransit side in those peak hours, morning and afternoon, where we don't have enough capacity. That's where we see our on-time performance drop. So we need to almost disincentivize people from taking paratransit. But because we have to treat the two services the same under the FTA guidelines, we might have some restrictions there as to what we can and can't do. And that's why it seems like a fairly straightforward idea, but I think once we get into the minutiae, there might be some hangups that we have to overcome.
Right. And I understand that the demand for paratransit, because it's door-to-door service, yeah. Right? But ultimately, if you have at 100% capacity, that's how many vehicles that's off of a particular roadway, you know? So from a geometric perspective, it's more attractive, especially for this area.
Yes.
Next, I have Marie Dorsman. Do you have any member comments?
No comments.
And Robert Goodman left the meeting. Maria Hernandez?
No comments.
Robin Manuel?
No comments.
I don't believe Angie Morlock joined us. Vanessa Palomino?
No comment.
David Orfidas?
Yes, a couple comments. One is, I think about this has been a very, very informative session for me. A lot of new information that I wasn't aware of, but and I'm not trying to instigate anything with these comments, but are we looking at how we transport individuals from the jail facilities or the homeless camps or facilities like that? And it seems like we have a very high incidence of COVID in the jails, and they may be using mass transportation of some sort. That was one thing. And also, I have a real concern about the drivers, and not saying that they should get hazard pay, but it seems like there should be some incentive financially or through healthcare or something for these people, because without them, our system falls apart. And I think that they're very, very imperative and very, very crucial for our success. Just a couple comments.
Thank you, David. I don't necessarily know what Palm Trans services are from the local jail. Do you have any comments?
For the local jail, from what I know, we actually provide them bus passes, so that when they leave, we give them a bus pass to take the bus, go wherever they need to go. There's a one-day bus pass. We did partner with the county to transport the homeless from the Lewis Center to the Ag Reserve out there near the South, the Florida Fairgrounds over there. We did that for a couple months until the program ended. So through this COVID, we've actually looked to do more things. In previous meetings, we talked about delivering meals through the area into aging and Division of Senior Services, the homeless transport. So we're trying to also help other county agencies get the food out to people. All those things. As far as the drivers, the other crazy thing is they're not even on the list yet to get a vaccine. You know, I mean, just to throw it out there, it's tough. Yeah, they're out there every day with the public, and it's slow to be reacted to that. There actually is a bill out there. Sean, I can wake Sean up out there, but there is something about hazard pay for transit. Wasn't there something that someone started like last year to try and get some extra money for transit employees?
Yeah, so it was under the Senate proposal for the HEROES Act, there was language proposing to have hazard pay for transit workers and others. It did not progress. I do not believe that it's in the CRISA funding. It was not something successful. And we did look at it internally with PalmTran as to how we could do something for our bus operators. We ran into a significant number of obstacles, both with our local rules, state statutes, and federal restrictions that prevented us from being able to make those changes for our fixed route operators. You know, I can't speak as to what the private companies that are running our paratransit service can or can't do, but to some degree, anything extra that they'd have to do, they'd have to find it within their same funding scope. And I don't think that that's really, they don't have that much flexibility into how much they're receiving under this contract to absorb that. And we didn't have a method to give them additional funding to do that. So it really kind of limited our options to move forward in those regards.
What about pump time?
What we were able to do for our employees, those that had been working through the pandemic, was similar to what the county did for their employees, as we did offer up to 32 hours of comp time for those employees. So that was additional paid leave that they received, just as a small acknowledgement of the work that they continue to do.
Thank you.
Marlene Ramnon. Takesha Saffold.
Sorry, I muted myself. No comments.
Thank you. Takesha.
Yes, I have two comments. First and foremost, I want to say that we have an excellent paratransit system here in Palm Beach County. Compared to other paratransit systems, as a rider, I've had the opportunity to use other paratransit systems, especially during the pandemic, and we have one of the best services that is more equipped towards the ridership and everyone. And so I really value and appreciate that. I just wanted to make that comment. Secondly, I know that Kelsey, she mentioned that she is the new liaison, and she mentioned a few things. And I just want to let you know that I would like to assist in any way possible, especially with the upcoming Legislative Day Awareness virtual event and anything else that I can assist with. My goal is to become more active on this board. And so in any way that I can assist, I certainly would like to. Thank you.
Yes, Lou.
Thank you, Takesha, for those comments. We appreciate it.
I have Laura Schultz next.
Other than to empathize with all of us on the difficulties of learning to wear masks and having them worn consistently by all people that we encounter, we do a lot of work on teaching students about mask wearing. So I definitely empathize with you on that. And other than that, I have no comments. Thank you.
Mallory Sinnott. Okay, and then I just have you, Mayor Grant.
Again, I want to thank everyone for attending our first meeting for 2021. I'd like to thank our presenters, our new representatives. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm looking forward to work with anyone who wants to end the digital divide for our population that has missed out on the internet over these past couple decades. And that's it for me. Moving on to administrative items, we have a letter to Tomas Boynton rescinding his LCB membership due to lack of attendance. This letter is highlighting Mr. Boynton's membership being rescinded due to lack of attendance. As I noted prior, this is an advocate position was filled by Ms. Deng. Staff are there, and any public comments?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right, and would the board like to make any comments? If not, our next board meeting is scheduled for May 26, 2021. At this time, I would invite any additional board member comments, which we already went through. We had the roll call, and now we're motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Thank you. Second. All right.
Second.
Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.